Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachas Daf Lamed Beis. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will commence from the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, second line from the bottom. In our previous shiur, we noticed Rav Chelbo, who had seen the mezuzah of Rav Huna, and he noticed that it was written in the Stuma fashion. For details regarding Stuma and, conversely, Psucha, two different methods of writing successive sections of the Sefer Torah, or of the Mezuzah in this case, one is highly advised to look in the Rambam, Perek Ches, Halacha Aleph and Beis of Hilchus Sefer Torah, which is found in Sefer Ahava. As far as our shiur is concerned, in our previous shiur, we mentioned what a stuma looks like, but as I recommend, looking at the Rambam will shed much more light on the topic. So for the purposes of our particular discussion, we will simply refer to the two terms, stuma and psucha. Very briefly, we can say that stuma is a situation where a new section, a new parsha of the Torah will be written on the same line that the previous parsha finished. There is another situation of stuma that we mentioned in our previous shiur, whereby the new parsha, let us say that the previous parsha ended at the end of the previous line, the new parsha will be indented, whereby the end of the line will have the new parsha written on it, and the case of psucha is, of course, a different type of setup, where you will have a previous parsha, let us say, ending in the middle of a particular line, and the new parsha beginning at the beginning of the new line. There are other situations of psucha and stuma that, for that, we recommend looking at the Rambam. But for our purposes, we'll simply refer to these as two methods of writing parshios. The question is, how are we supposed to write the parsha of V'hoya Im Shama, the second parsha of the mezuzah, relative to the end of the first parsha, namely Parshas Shema, which is in the mezuzah? When one looks in a Sefer Torah, one should note that Parshas Shema is in Parshas Vo'eschanon of Sefer Dvarim, and Parshas V'hoya Im Shamoa is not next to it at all. It's in the succeeding Sedra, known as Parshas Ekev. So that you don't have a situation in the Torah where the Shema and V'hoya Im Shamoa are next to each other. However, in the Torah, where Parshas Shema ends, the succeeding Parsha is written in one of these fashions, and in Parshas, with regard to Parshas V'hoya Im Shamoa, it starts after the previous Parsha in the Sefer Torah with respect to its specific method. The question is, when you have a mezuzah, do you position V'hoya Im Shamoa after Parshas Shema the way V'hoya Im Shamoa appears in the Torah after its given Parsha? So we now continue in the Gemara, starting, as we said, from the second line from the bottom after having noted that Rav Huna's mezuzah was written in the Stuma fashion, namely that Parshas V'hoya Im Shamoa could very well have begun on the same line that Parshas Shema ended. The Gemara now asks a question. The question is a long question, as is indicated by the long question marker, the kuf that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, with a vertical dashed line which continues down Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, five lines from the top, all of this constitutes question material. Meisvei, Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar reports Rabbi Meir hoya koisva al duchsustus kemin daf. Duchsustus is a reference to the nature of the parchment, the type of parchment. We will say a word about that in a minute, but before we go any further, let's draw your attention to the main point of this brisa, why it's brought in. You'll notice the second line from the top, it's mentioned that the parshios were psuchos, which is different, and hence a kasha on Rav Huna's mezuzah. And this is a Tanaic source, hence it's being brought in as a kasha on Rav Huna. And not only that, but we'll notice the third, fourth line from the top, Rav paskins like this source. And if he does, it would seem to include this detail that the mezuzah is to be written in the psucha fashion. That having been said, you realize what the kasha is. Now let's look into the details of this particular Tanaic source. So the first point that was mentioned was that Rabbi Meir had written his mezuzah on duchsustus. The word duchsustus, based on the Tosfos in Maseches Shabbos, is a reference to the skin of an animal. When it's skinned, it has two layers. It can be split into two layers. There's an upper layer called klaf, and a lower layer closest to the meat of the animal, which is called duchsustus. And Tosfos there in Shabbos explains that the word duchsustus is really a compound expression, duch meaning plate and place, and sustus meaning meat. So Rabbi Meir wrote his mezuzah on the lower level, the lower layer of the split skin. That's called duchsustus. He also wrote it kemin daf. Rashi explains at the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, kemin omud shebesforim aruka uktsora. He wrote it as a column that you find in a Sefer Torah, namely with not long lines, and we'll call it more or less narrow lines, in a column fashion. Continuing at the top of Lamed Beis Omer Aleph, the Oise Revach Milamala, the Revach Milamato, he would leave a type of margin on the top of the mezuzah parchment and at the bottom of the mezuzah parchment. Now, we've added a dotted underline to the word Revach because of the fact the Gemara later will make a reference to that expression. V'oise parshioseha psuchos. We mentioned a moment before that this is the main point. Hence you see the dashed underline under the word psuchos, with which you can contrast it to the way Rav Huna had prepared his mezuzah using the stuma method, the second line from the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. So we see here that Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Shimon Melozer, wrote his mezuzah in the psucha fashion. Almarti lo, this is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar speaking. He says, I turned to Rabbi Meir and addressed him, Rabbi, matam, why do you write the mezuzah using the psucha method? If we look in the Rashi at the top, Almarti lo, Rabbi, matam, ato oise oisam psuchos, and here's the main point, vahalo batoira, stumos hein. In the Torah, the parshios of Shema, Avoyo, Im Shema are in the Stuma method. Revach Shalachar Ubishorecha Husosum. The word Ubishorecha is the last word of the parshios Shema. It is Sosum, which would mean that the section of the Torah found right after the paragraph of Shema in parshios Vayeshanan is Sosum, which would mean the new section begins on the same line after a small gap. The section in the Torah after Parsha Shema begins on the same line. V'horevach be'emtza hashita, as we just mentioned, and there's a little gap in the middle of the line. The subsequent Parsha, that which appears right after Shema, begins on the same line after this brief gap. So why in your mezuzah do you write it in the psucha fashion? Namely, the parsha of Shema ends, let us say, in the middle of the line, and there's a gap till the end of the line, and v'hoyo'im shamoa, you write already on the next line. So Omar Li, Rav Shimon ben Elazar tells us that Rabbi Meir answered him, Hoyo v'ein smuchos min haTorah, since Parshas Shema and V'hoyo im Shema are not next to each other in the Torah. And since they're not next to each other in the Torah, then we are not bound to have them written in the way they appear in the Torah. The Omar of Hananel Omar Rav, Halocha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rav emphasizes that the legal ruling shall follow that of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's report of Rabbi Meir in this source. My Lav, when Rav says we should follow Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, is it not referring to a psuchos, indicating that psuchos is the way to go, which would be the kasha on Rav Huna's mezuzah? Loi. The psak of Rav, when he says, let us follow Rav Shimon Elazar, he's not referring to that element. After all, in this source, a number of points were reported. Rav did not intend to follow that particular point. He was referring to a revach, referring to the issue of the margins left on the top and the bottom. We have a bracketed section, as you can see in the Gemara. On the inside margin, an explanation appears. Sograyim l'shem dilug. We want to skip this brief section that's in brackets. Kedei lahatsmid dvorav shel Abaye v'ho dinemar kan. So as to attach that which Abaye says after this bracketed section to that which we just said. Namely, the issue of a revach. So, Omar, skipping briefly, and we'll come back to the bracketed section. Omar le Abaye le Rav Yosef. Viat lo tisbara, do you not agree, dechi Omar Rav a Revach, that when Rav paskin like Rav Shimon ben Elazar, he was referring to the issue of Revach, and not regarding the issue of Psuchos. In other words, Rav would not do the psucha method. Rav himself would not do the psucha method. We will see very briefly in a moment that Rav emphasizes that one should follow the common practice. And in the case of mezuzah writing, the common practice was to have it written in the stuma fashion. So knowing that Rav himself follows the minhag, and the minhag, the common practice, is to do the stuma fashion, if Rav is paskening like the source above, Rav Shimon ben Elazar, it wouldn't be regarding psuchos. It must have been regarding the issue of revach. And so the Gemara says, V'hol Rav isle minhoga. Rav emphasizes minhog, common practice. For idno nohug alma besumos. And nowadays, the oilam, the community, the public, practices the stuma method. You'll see a bracketed section. This bracketed section also should be skipped initially. And right afterwards, you see, it says, lower, more than halfway down the page, it says, Ela lav. Shma mina arevach. So we must conclude that Rav, because he emphasizes minhag, if he was paskening like Rav Shimon Elazar, he must have been paskening like him with regard to the issue of revach, shma mina, and that is conclusive. In this bracketed section, the Gemara is simply bringing an unrelated source designed to show that Rav follows minhag. So after all is said and done, we've emphasized that Rav follows Minhag, and the Minhag is to do Stumos. Therefore, if Rav is going to paskin like Rav Shimon ben Elazar, he could not have been referring to that aspect of the Rav Shimon ben Elazar source that mentioned Psuchos. Rather, he must have been referring to the issue of Revach. Now that we've presented the Gemara in its, we'll call, logical flow pattern, let's now go over the entire Gemara, starting from the upper part of this page, where we had the first bracketed section, including the content of the brackets. We should have noted earlier that when you run into a bracketed section that lasts for more than a line, we employ a bracket length indicator. That's a special mark that you'll find to the side of the Gemara text, a vertical dashed dotted line. And you can see two of those markers appear here because we had just encountered two bracketed sections. So let's go over the Gemara. From the upper part of the page, we had encircled Rav's name, where Rav said, we paskin like Reb Shimon ben Elozer, and we said that that presented a problem because Reb Shimon ben Elozer mentioned that the method of writing is psuchos, and that was contrary to Rav Huna's mezuzah, which was stumos. The Gemara then answered, lo, arevach, Rav's psak, like Reb Shimon ben Elozer, is regard to the issue of margin leaving at the top and bottom of the mezuzah. In the brackets, first bracketed section, v'kamo revach, how much is that? How wide is that margin that appears on the top of the mezuzah? Omar Rav Menashe Bar Yankov, v'amri lo, another version by way of names is Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Yankov. The first version is Rav Menashe Bar Yankov, the second version is Rav Shmuel Bar Yankov. The size of the revach, of the space, or the margin is kemeloi atbo de sefri. This is a reference to the scribes' clasps that were used to fasten the parchment to the writing table or writing board on which the scribes wrote their material, so that if they were writing a mezuzah, they would use a certain type of clasp. And the clasp, in order to hold the parchment on which the mezuzah was writing, it naturally had to grab onto, be attached to a certain amount of parchment material. So the amount of parchment material that was covered by the clasp, so to speak, was the defined, we'll say, the margin left at the top and the bottom. It may very well be that as a result of this, let us say someone was able to write a mezuzah even without a clasp, nevertheless he would leave the amount of space on the top of his, we'll call it handheld mezuzah writing, that would be the amount that a clasp would cover had he used a clasp in the first place. The Gemara now continues, and we have a long point that appears, you can see, on the right-hand side of the Gemara text. This is the nun in that's encircled represents a nekuda, a point, and the vertical dashed line that follows indicates that all of this section of Gemara is here to develop the point. And the point here is Abaye's insistence that Rav's paskening, like Reb Shimon ben Elozer, must have been with regard to Revach and not with regard to the issue of Psuchos. Omar Abaye, the Rav Yosef, V'at lo tizbara, would you not agree, dechi Omar Rav a Revach, that when Rav paskened halocha k'Reb Shimon ben Elozer, that when he paskened like that, he must have been referring to the issue of revach and not with regard to psuchos. V'hol Rav islei minhoga. Rav emphasizes in legal rulings to follow the common practice. In other words, if you have a situation where the halacha, where there isn't a firm stand that's taken on some particular issue, there may be some level of unclarity, you will follow the minig. And v'ho'ibno, and nowadays, nohu almo bestumos. Nowadays, the public follows the stumo method. Now, in the brackets that follows, we will see how Rav places an emphasis on minhug. We should also note that there are two lishonos that appear. One is called Aleph, and a few lines later, you will see Rav Yosef's version. In other words, you'll have Rabo quoting Rav Kana Omar Rav, and then Rav Yosef quoting Omar Rav Kana Omar Rav. So as we say, there are two versions to what we're about to see. The Omar Rabo Omar Rav Kahana Omar Rav. We've emphasized Rav's name with a diamond simply to make for easier reference to the two versions. Im Yovov, we should mention that we're about to learn about the type of shoe that is used in the chalitza ceremony, which is a ceremony that releases a widow whose husband had died, leaving no children from entering the yibum relationship, namely the marriage to her husband's surviving brother. In order to release a woman from needing or from being obligated to marry the surviving brother, chalitza is done. And that's a ceremony whereby the widow removes a shoe from her brother-in-law's foot. The type of shoe is what is the subject of our Gemara here. There is something called a sandal, which is an open-type shoe, and a min'ol, which is a closed-type shoe. For purposes of illustration only, without getting into actual halachic ramifications, which of course in the context of our shiurim of Gemara markings, we never deal with actual applied halacha. A sandal that the Gemara mentions, which is an open shoe, might be in order just to remember what we're talking about, but not to draw an actual illustration. It is somewhat reminiscent of the word sandal, which is an open type of shoe. But once again, we can't emphasize enough that we're not saying for a moment that the common sandal that people wear would be that which is used in the Yibum chalitza ceremony, but it's at least a reference point for realizing that something referring to an open kind of shoe. The minol, on the other hand, is the other one, namely the closed kind. So Rav tells us the following. Im yovo Eliyahu v'yomar, Eliyahu, a reference to Eliyahu Hanavi, the prophet Eliyahu, v'yomar, and he would announce, chultzim b'minol. He makes an announcement that chalitza is done with a closed kind of shoe. Shomino, we would accept that. Apparently, up till now, or namely up till the point Elio comes, it doesn't seem that the minol was commonly used, but if he would tell us, you can do chalitza with a minol, shomino. We've used this double underline with dots in it marking to show the, we'll call it the similarity and structure of this Lashon with the next Lashon. So we've simply highlighted the expression Shomin Lo. We would heed what he says. However, number two, Ein Cholzin B'Sandal, if Elio would come and announce, you are not to use the sandal, which we said was the open type shoe, Ein Shomin Lo. We would not heed what he says. And note, we've dashed underlined, this is the key point, Shekvar Nohagu Ha'om B'Sandal. The public has become accustomed, or common practice of the public is to use the sandal. So that even if the great image of Eliyahu HaNavi would tell us not to use sandal, we would not listen to him. And that shows us how much emphasis Rav places on Minhag. It's interesting to note that the fact that the minhag was to use the sandal, that is not enough to exclude the use of the minhag, of the minhag, of the closed shoe, but it certainly is enough to preclude someone telling us not to use the sandal. The Rav Yosef Amarav Kanamarav, the Rav Yosef version, is as follows. Im Yovo Elio V'Yomar, if Elio would come and tell us, Ein cholzin b'minol, shomin lo. The markings here are designed to contrast this lashon with the previous lashon. In the previous lashon, the issue of minol was presented in the positive way. If Elio would come and tell us, you can use a minol, we would listen to him. This version has him saying, if Elio would come and say, Ein, hence you see the squiggle underline under Ein to show the difference. Ein cholzin b'minol. If he would tell us not to use the minol, shomin lo. We would listen to him. This gives us the impression that up till the coming of Eliyahu, the minhag was used. His coming and it was used not necessarily as the public, commonly accepted form, but it existed as a possibility. And therefore, if Eliyahu would come and say not to use the minhag, then we would stop using it. But up till this point, we would be using the minhag. However, ein cholsin besandal, this you'll notice, this number 2 is the same as the first version, as the Rabo version. If he would tell us ein cholsin besandal, ein shomin lo, we would not listen to him. Once again, shikvar nohagu ha'om besandal. So as far as the reason for this section of these two versions being brought in, they agree on this point of the strength of minhag. If the common practice is to use, in this case, the sandal, even Eliyahu would not be heeded if he were to instruct otherwise. So with regard to their respective points number 2, there's total agreement. What's the point of difference between these two approaches? The Amrinon Mai Binayu. What's the difference between the Aleph version, the Rabo version, and the Rav Yosef version? Answer: Minol Lechatchila Iko Binayu. To nowadays, before Eliyahu comes on the scene, would Minol be considered a first choice? So, according to the Aleph version, it seems that nowadays, before Eliyahu comes, it was not a first choice, and therefore, according to the first version, if Eliyahu would come and tell us to use it, then we would listen to him. Apparently, it wasn't commonly used as a first choice. According to the second version, only if Eliyahu comes and says, stop using them, and all, then we would listen. Apparently, it was accepted as a first choice to, in fact, use a minhag. So that's the point of difference, how things operated or would operate before the coming of Eliyahu. After all is said and done, what do we see from this whole approach? We see that Rav places an emphasis on minhag. And just like we saw in the case of the sandal, that it was a very well entrenched practice, hence we would not listen to Eliyahu, who would say otherwise with regard to the minhag of the chalitza shoe. So too with regard to the minhag concerning the writing of the mezuzah, if the minhag was to do it in the stuma fashion, then Rav, when he paskened like Reb Shimon Elozer, who happened to mention a psucha method, it couldn't be that Rav is ruling like that aspect of Reb Shimon ben Elozer. Elolav, shma mino arevach. Therefore, we must conclude that Rav's ruling above, where we had circled his name, was with regard to the margin left at the top. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Omar, mitzvah la'asoysan stumos. That it's preferable to prepare the mezuzah in the stuma fashion, which, as we said before, the parsha v'hoyo im shamoa would begin on the same line that parshas Shema ended, as one example of what a stuma may look like. V'i avdinu psuchos. If, however, you prepared the mezuzah was written in the psucha fashion, shapir domi, it would be okay. Umay psuchos de ka'omar Reb Shimon ben Elozer. If the mitzvah is, if the preferable way is to do it stumos, so what was psuchos that was referred to above? And you can see we have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and you can see the corresponding star, second line from the top, where Reb Shimon Elozer had mentioned that the Reb Meir prepared his mezuzah in the psuchos fashion. If you're telling me it's mitzvah to be done stumos, what is meant by psuchos above? Answer: af psuchos, that even psuchos is an option. Lemo misayale. Let us suggest that the following can serve as a support to what was just said. we had a teaching of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, maybe the following can support him. Let us point out that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, is giving us both options, that in addition to Stumos, Psuchos is a possibility. So we have a Tanaic source, and it says, Kayotze Bo, we can identify this, of course, as a Tanaic source, because in our Gemara marking system, we enclose Tanaic sources in frames, so as to set them apart from the rest of the Gemara. So we have a source that says, Kayotze Bo Sefer Torah Shebola, Utfilin Shebolu, a Sefer Torah that became worn out, or Tfilin that became worn out. We're talking, of course, about the parchments that are found inside tefillin. If they became worn out, ein oisin mehen mezuzah. You are not to use the Shema v'hoyal im shamoa sections in the Sefer Torah or in the tefillin in order to prepare a mezuzah. Why not? Lefi she'ein moiridin mikedusha chamura lekedusha kala. Because one is not to lower from a high level sanctity to a lower level sanctity. The Sefer Torah and Tefillin being categorized as higher level sanctity relative to the mezuzah. But now one can ask, Ha Moridin Oisin. If that were not an issue, then one would be able to prepare a mezuzah using the parshios of the Sefer Torah. Amai, why should that be allowed? Hocha stumois v'hocha psuchos. In the case of the Sefer Torah, they appear in the stuma fashion. In the case of the mezuzah, they are psucha. So, from the fact that, if not for the issue of Ein Moridin B'Kedusha, that option would be available, it shows us that the mezuzah also could be done in the stuma way. So that would be the siyua to what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was teaching. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak was saying that it's ideal to do it in the stuma method. If you do it in the psucha method, it's okay. Where do we see the idea of the mezuzah being done in the stuma fashion? Well, if you were to take the parshios from the Sefer Torah, where Shema v'hoyim Shema appear as stuma, you would have been able to make them into a mezuzah, which shows, like Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, that stuma is a method just like psucha is an accepted method. The Gemara rejects and says, Dilma lehashlim. As far as using this source as a proof that the mezuzah could have been done in a stuma way, that we are not going to say. It could be that what this source is indicating, that had it not been for the problem of Ein Moridin B'Kedusha, one could have used a Sefer Torah, that's with regard to Lahashlim. What does that mean? So if we look in the Shita Mekubetzes Ois Hei, you'll see it's underlined underneath the Tosfos in the wide lines. You'll see the fourth line of the Shita Mekubetzes commentary, Lahashlim, Kegoin Shekosav Besoif Daf Shel Sefer Torah Parshas Shema. Let's say that you have this worn out Sefer Torah and Parshas Shema appears at the lower part of the column. V'hu Misaimo Begilyoin. The end of Parshas Shema appears at a point at which underneath it there is the bottom margin of the Sefer Torah. So he would cut out from this worn out Sefer Torah the section that has Shema written on it, including the bottom margin that appears underneath it. For Oise Parsha Stuma, the Koisev V'Hoyo Im Shamoa, and he would make a Parsha Stuma of V'Hoyo Im Shamoa. So that as far as using this source to show both possibilities, psuchos and stumos, that we cannot do. All we can say is that the source is saying that if not for the problem of Moridin Bekedusha, he would be mashlim the parsha of the Hoya Im Shamo in the margin underneath the Shema section. Before going any further, we would like to refine the pshat that we just gave and suggest as follows, that when the Gemara answers Dilma Lahashlim, it's really coming to counter that which was attempted a moment before. We attempted to show from the case of the worn-out Sefer Torah that both options exist. Namely, you can have your mezuzah prepared even in the psucha fashion as is found in the Sefer Torah. The Gemara then rejected that and said, you can't prove from this case that you have the stuma method also. Maybe Dilma Lahashlim, the Gemara said. And we made reference to the Shita Mekubetzes, but we want to refine that which we saw there. And it could be that in the case of the worn-out Sefer Torah, you would cut out the parsha of Shema and continue the parsha of Vayom Shema underneath it in the margin that appears, but in a psucha method. The psucha method would be whereby the parsha Shema ended in the middle of the bottom line, in the middle of the bottom line of the Sefer Torah that got worn out, and you'll start the Vahoya Im Shamoa at the beginning of the next line. That would be a psucha method. So that from the case of the worn out Sefer Torah, we don't see that the psucha is taught in addition to stuma. The Sefer Torah is stuma, and the mezuzah is psucha. And of course, that would not support the cause of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, who was trying to say both possibilities exist. We have a marking that we just encountered, and we want to draw our attention to what is taking place. We have a house marking. In the outside margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading. Im lo hoya iser shel ein morid b'kedusha, we had just been taught, had there been no problem of lowering in sanctity level, hoya efshar lekachas parshios shel sefer Torah o tefillin lishtamish bahen l'tzorach mezuzah. It would have been possible for someone to take the parshios of the Torah or tefillin that are common to the mezuzah and make from them a mezuzah. That's what the source left us thinking. The mivneh, this house marking that appears, which says ha moridin, sidra shakushios al hanal, they represent a series of questions on that which we just taught. Shechutz mi ba'aya zu di ein moridin, the nature of the questions will be that besides the problem of ein moridin b'kedusha, yesh sibois acherois loy lasos mehem mezuzah. There are in fact other reasons not to make from them a mezuzah. One of them we just got finished learning, and in fact we stay with that. The first thing we just learned was that if not for the fact of Moridin, there still would have been a problem in that in the Sefer Torah it appears stuma, and with regard to the mezuzah it appears as a psucha. So how could you possibly make a mezuzah from the Sefer Torah? So the Gemara answered that in fact that difference remains, but by virtue of the circumstances that these parshas Shema ended at the bottom line, leaving margin space underneath it, we were able to, in fact, write the parsha of Vahoya Im Shema. Nevertheless, this difference was maintained, the stuma in the case of Sefer Torah and the mezuzah, the psucha method. We now ask another question using the same style. Ha moridin oisin? And if one would be able to lower sanctity level, one in fact would be able to make from a Sefer Torah a mezuzah. Vahatanya. You'll notice another marking. This is a ma'akav, and we've indicated this on the side, on the outside margin. Kushios, with the narrow part facing upwards, this represents questions, and the narrow part facing downwards of this trapezoid volcano form represents answers. So the Gemara asks, how can you say that besides the problem of lowering sanctity level, that there would have been an option of making a mezuzah from a Sefer Torah? The following source, Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, there is an oral tradition from Sinai, Tefillin al haklaf u'mezuzah al duchsustus, that tefillin are written on the klaf. And we spoke about this earlier in today's shiur, the upper layer of the two layer, the split layer of skin, the klaf is the upper layer, u'mezuzah al duchsustus, and mezuzah is to be written on the lower layer. Klaf b'mokom basar, this means that when you're using the upper layer of skin, you are to write whatever you're writing. In this case, we see that tefillin are on klaf, so you write the tefillin on the inside layer, the inside side, we'll say, the lower side, the side that faces the flesh, the faces the meat. Once again, if you have you split the animal skin into two layers, the upper layer is called klaf. You'll write it on the side of that upper layer that faces in its natural state, that faces the meat of the animal. Duchsustus, in the case of the mezuzah that we said, you write on duchsustus. What side of the duchsustus do you write it? You'll write it the mokom sear, on the upper side of the lower layer, the upper side, namely the side that would face the animal's hair. So the question is, you see that even without regarding the issue of lowered level of sanctity, you could not take a tefillin and convert them into a mezuzah, because the tefillin are written on klaf and the mezuzah is written on duchsustus. The Gemara answers, that consideration is lemitzvah. It's only the best way, but it's not binding. The Gemara asks, "V'ha'tanya shina posel." This brief source says that if you switch around, it's unacceptable. So you can't just say it's lemitzvah; it's actually binding. The Gemara answers, "B'tfillin." This issue of binding is only with regard to change in tfillin, but we are talking about mezuzah right now. "V'ha'tanya," but there is another source that says, "Shina bein bozeh ubein bozeh posel," which implies a change not only with regard to tefillin, but with regard to mezuzah also, would render it unfit. So how can you suggest above that besides the issue of ein moridin b'kedusha, you could have used tefillin for mezuzah? Here you see that any change, and here we're talking about the nature of the parchment, would also render it unfit. The Gemara answers, that source, the source that we just saw that says a change, whether it be in this or in that, are both changes with regard to the tefillin alone. Edi v'edi b'tefillin, v'ha dekasvinu aklaf b'mokom sear. One problem in the tefillin could be where you wrote it on klaf, which is the correct layer. However, you wrote it on the wrong side of the correct layer. You wrote it on the outside of the upper layer. That's the mokom sear. That would be incorrect. The ha, and another change in tefillin would be de kasvinu a duchsustus, that you wrote the tefillin on duchsustus, which is the wrong layer altogether. Bemokom bosar, meaning even if you wrote it bemokom bosar, which in the case of klaf would have been the correct side to do it on, but if you used duchsustus, even if you choose the correct side, so to speak, that would also be no good, because duchsustus is no good even if you, no matter what side you do it on. So the two changes that were referred to in the most recent quoted Tanaic source are both referring to tefillin. However, with regard to mezuzah, there would have been no problem had you written the mezuzah, which should be written on duchsustus, and wrote it on klaf. The only reason not to take the tefillin and make it into mezuzah is the problem of moridin b'kedusha. V'iboyes eimo, another approach to this last question is, shino boze ubaze tanoi hi. The issue of the change as being a reason for psul, namely, even if you say the change in mezuzah is what is will render it unfit, even if you were change meaning you wrote the mezuzah on cloth would render it unfit, that is tanoi. This that itself is a ktenei controversy. Desanyo shino bozel was an apostle. Rav Acha machshir. So you see that according to Rav Acha, the fact that you may have written the mezuzah on klaf would not have been a problem. The only problem, according to Rav Acha, then, taking tefillin and making them into a mezuzah would be the problem of lowering the sanctity level. According to the girsa that appears in the inside margin, the next two lines are not part of the text, and we will pick up with the next ha moridin question. Once again, just to review, we saw a source on Omid Aleph that indicated that the only problem of taking a Sefer Torah or tefillin and making them into a mezuzah would be the problem of lowering kedusha level. However, if not for that, one could have made the tefillin, taken a Sefer Torah or tefillin that got worn out and make them into a mezuzah. The Gemara asks, ha morida. Notice, of course, this is a long question. You can see that's indicated by the long question marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text where you see a kuf with a little house marking around it and a vertical dashed line indicating all of the lines parallel to this vertical dashed line of the Gemara will be question material. So the Gemara asks, ha morida nosin, had you been allowed to lower sanctity level, you would have been able to make tefillin and Sefer Torah into a mezuzah v'ha bayos sirtut. What about the problem of the etched lining that exists in the case of a mezuzah? This is called sirtut. The Omar Rav Menyumi Bar Chukia, Omar Rav Chama Bar Guya, Omar Rav Kol mezuzah she'ena mesurtetes psula. Any mezuzah that it does not have this etched overlining in it, whereby the tops of each row of letters touch this sirtut line. If the mezuzah doesn't have this sirtut, this etched in lines, then it's not fit. V'rav min yomen bar chukyo didei omar sirtut shel mezuzah halacha l'moshe misinai. And you can see from the gist of this question that sirtut is something that is characteristic of a mezuzah, and Rashi points out that in the case of tefillin, for example, we don't find the need for sirtut. So how can you say that the tefillin, which don't have sirtut, could have been made into mezuzah that demands sirtut? The Gemara answers, tanoi hi. The issue is a machlokes tanoim, as we will now see. Desanyo, Reb Yirmiya Omer Mishum Rabbeinu, Tfilin Umezuzos Nichtavos Shalom in Aksav, V'ein Tzrichos Sirtut. We've dashed underline what's critical for our discussion. We have a shita here that says that Mezuzos Ein Tzrichos Sirtut. So that even though we saw a dashed underline expression before, which featured, we'll say, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, an oral tradition from Sinai that says that mezuzah needs sirtut. Here we have an alternative source, in this case a Tanaic source. It seems that we're pitting off a Tanaic source against the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, or possibly against the fact that Rav was quoted before, and Rav has the strength of a Tana in some places. So here we have a Tanaic authority that says Ein Tzrichos Sirtut. And based on that, we can say what we originally implied, that if not for the fact of lowering sanctity level, one could have taken the tefillin, albeit it does not have sirtut, and make them into a mezuzah. And you'll ask, well, it lacks sirtut. That's okay. You see, according to Rav Yirmiyah, the mezuzah does not need sirtut. There are two points, though, that were in this Tanaic source. Let's go over them. The first was that tefillin and mezuzahs are nechtavos shalom in aksav. You'll notice we call that point aleph, that they can be written by heart. The Gemara in Maseches Megillah teaches that when writing the holy books, so to speak, when you're talking about the writing of the Sifrei Tanakh, you're supposed to write them from a pre-existing text that's in front of the scribe. In the case of tefillin and mezuzahs, they can be written even without looking in a pre-existing text. That's, or we can say very simply, can written by heart. The second point was what we just discussed, Ein Tzrichos Sirtut. V'hilchasa, the Gemara now rules on these points. Tfilin lo boi sirtut, u'mezuzah baya sirtut. Tfilin do not require the etched lines, and mezuzah does. V'idi, both of these, tfilin and mezuzah, nichtavos shelo min haksav, can be written without a pre-existing text in front of the scribe. My taimo, why is there this allowance? When we said a moment ago, we quoted from the Gemara in Megillah, which says that holy texts, Sifrei Tanakh, are supposed to be written from pre-existing texts in front of the scribe. The answer here in this case is Migras Grisin. They are known with fluency. Everyone knows the Parshios of Shema and Voyam Shema by heart, and therefore the fear of a mistake is close to non-existent, as opposed to the case of the writing of Sephorim of the Tanakh. Without a pre-existing text, the possibility of mistake, in other words, relying on one's memory, would result in a very great likelihood of a mistake being made. As you can see, we have a slash mark that appears here, indicating that that which follows is a new idea. Let us glance at the outside margin. We have a Nosei Mivneh heading. A diamond is featured. Deois Be'inyon Yeshiva Al Mito Sheshala Sefer Torah. We'll see two opinions with regard to sitting on a bed on which there is a Sefer Torah lying there. Omar Rabbi Rav Chelbo tells us in the Gemara, and we also have a little note that we've seen Rav Chelbo and his observation of Rav Huna on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. In fact, the beginning of today's shiur made reference to Rav Chelbo and his citation of Rav Huna. We should note that in the course of this little section of Gemara, we will note a double underlining is used to highlight the words Osir and Mutter. So as we said, there are two opinions regarding sitting on a bed with a Sefer Torah on it. And of course, we're dealing with an issue of respect. Omar Rav Chelbo, Ano Chazisei the Rav Huna, there is a girsa that says, Deboi lemesav apurya, the Sefer Torah aleo. He wanted to sit on a bed, purya, a bed, that a Sefer Torah had been lying on. The kof lekado aaro, he took a jug and flipped it over so that the mouth of the jug is facing the ground and the bottom of the jug is facing upwards. And it served now as a type of table or shelf for the Sefer Torah. It says, V'kof v'kado, the kof is he inverted the kado, the jug, ha'ara, on the ground. V'onach alei Sefer Torah, he placed on the bottom of the jug, which is now facing upwards, he placed the Sefer Torah, v'hodei Yosef v'mita, and then he sat on the bed. Kosova, Rav Huna is of the opinion, Osir leishev al gabi mita she sefer Torah munach alel, that it's forbidden for one to sit on a bed on which a Sefer Torah is placed. And as we said, it would be a sense of lack of respect for one's body to be on the same level seated on the bed together with a Sefer Torah. Upligo de rabo bar chano. The approach we saw taken by Rav Huna is at odds or different than that of Rabbo Bar Bar Chana. Diyama Rabbo Chana Rabbi Yochanan, Muter Leishev Agabi Mita Shesefer Torah Muno Chaleo. Before we go too much further, let's just take note of the fact that in the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you notice a little 2 and a diamond with a vertical dashed line. That indicates that all of these lines are here to develop this particular shita, this point. So Rabbo tells us that it's mutter leishev agabi mita on a bed that a Sefer Torah is lying on it. Now, the im lachshach odom lomar, and if someone tells you, lachshach is an expression meaning whispers to you, but it's an expression often when it appears in the Shas, it's an expression indicating someone telling you something that ultimately you should not heed, ultimately don't accept. So, and if someone tries to tell you the following, you'll notice we use a phrase marking indicating that it's best to read the next 4 lines that's contained within the singular quotation marks in one breath, so to speak. So, and if someone comes to tell you the following, Ma'isib Rebbe Lozer, Shoyo Yoshev al Hamita v'nizkar she'sefer Torah munach aleha, v'nishmat v'yoshev al gabi karka v'doyme kamisha kisho nochosh. Hosam sefer Torah gabi karka havei. We'll go over that again. If someone comes to tell you that it's forbidden to sit on the bed with a Sefer Torah lying on it, and tries to tell you that based on the incident involving Rebbe Lozer, Ma'isiv Rebbe Lozer, we're reading the Gemara again, Shohayo Yoshev al Amita, he was seated on a bed, V'nizgar she'sefer Torah munochala, and he remembered that, hey, there's a Sefer Torah lying on this bed. V'nishmat v'yoshev al gabi karka, and he slipped off the bed and sat on the floor, V'doyme kemi shekisho nochosh, and his rapid movement gave the impression of one who was bitten by a snake. Hassam, the story there was totally different. Hassam Sefer Torah al gabi karka have. There was a story with the Sefer Torah that was lying on the floor. Rashi explains al gabi karka. Rashi, you'll notice in the upper column of Rashi commentary, he says, "Hoya Sefer Torah mushloch." The Sefer Torah was cast upon the ground. Dika bizyoinu yisera. There was a lot of bizon. It was very disparaging. Lakach mitzayir, and that's why he had this. He demonstrated this expression of being upset, as Rashi had mentioned before. Because of his tsar, he slipped off the bed. So his slipping off the bed to sit on the floor was not because the Sefer Torah was lying on the bed. It's rather because the Sefer Torah was in a state of disgrace that he felt such pain that he himself slipped off the bed to be on the ground. As you can see, we have a slash mark that it means that which follows is a new idea. In addition to that, we also see a triangle that appears. Let's glance at the outside margin under the Mivneh heading. You see a triangle. Sidra shel Meimros, a series of comments, Sh'Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel, Be'inyan Mezuzah. A number of halachas, and this series, as you can see, continues till Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, where you see comments of Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shmuel concerning Mezuzah. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kosva Igeres Psula. If one wrote the mezuzah in an Igeres fashion, Rashi explains Igeres is, in this case, is a reference to without the sirtut and without care for chaseros and yeseros. In writing words of the Torah, in this case the mezuzah, some words are read, for example, with a vav in it, with a vav cholam, meaning mezuzos, with the vav right before the saf at the end. But when you write the word, you write it without the vav. That would be an example of chaseros. Yeseros is an example of where you add the letter. So a mezuzah that is written without paying attention to those features, namely, it's without a sirtut and without diktuk b'chaseros v'yaseros, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, is psula. So my taima, from where do I know that you have to write the mezuzah with care and concern for these details? Asya ksiva ksiva misefer. There's a gzera shava that appears between the issue of mezuzah, uchsavtam amezuzos, it says in the amezuzos beisech misharecha, and it says in another pasuk, Rashi gives two possibilities. One is by a get, where it says v'kosav lo sefer krisus. Another is a pasuk in which it says kosav ksov zel zikaron basefer. In those psukim, you have the word v'kosav, just like you have by mezuzah, but in addition to that word, you also have the word sefer. And the word sefer, Rashi indicates, is a sefer is something, as opposed to an igeres, a sefer is something that requires precision when writing it. An igeres, sometimes translated as a letter, is something that does not require, that one would not expect a great attention to detail. But since the word kosav or ksiva is associated with sefer, therefore by mezuzah as well, where you have only the word ksiva, ksavtam, you also require this precision. The Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Tola B'Makel Psula. If you took the mezuzah and hung it on a pole, and or let us say there was a pole that was leaning against the doorpost, and you took a mezuzah and attached the mezuzah to the pole that was leaning on the doorpost. And when we say leaning, we're not referring to a pole that, let us say, is nailed into the doorpost, becoming part of the doorpost itself, but simply a pole that was leaning there. That is unacceptable. Mai taimo bishorecha bo'inon. The Torah says that you shall have the mezuzah bishorecha in your gateway, in your entranceway, and the pole is not part of the entranceway. Tanyo nami hochi, we have a Tanaic source that supports this. Tolo b'makel, if he suspended the mezuzah on a pole. Oy shenicho achar hadeles, or he placed the mezuzah on the wall behind the door. In other words, not in the doorway, but on the wall behind the door. That is, you, let's say, open up the door all the way, so the door comes flush up against a wall. So if he put the mezuzah over there, it would be, it's called sakona, there's danger, the ein bo mitzvah. The issue of sakona will be discussed later in the Gemara. Shelbeis mun bazamelech hoyu oisin bepundikus sehen kein zecher lemezuzah. These are emissaries of the king Munbaz. They spent all of their year on the road. They traveled with what we'll call portable mezuzahs. The punduk is an inn. An inn, if a person does not stay in the motel or in the inn for 30 days, it's not chayev in mezuzah. So these messengers or emissaries of King Munbaz, who were always on the road, since they were never home, they didn't want to lose, let's say, the memory of the mitzvah of mezuzah. So they attached mezuzahs that they carried with them to poles that they had placed in the doorways of their inns. This is recorded only to show that it's done as a zecher lemezuzah, only to remember the mitzvah of mezuzah, but not that it represents the actual mitzvah of mezuzah, because attaching a mezuzah to a pole that's standing in the doorway would not be a fulfillment of the actual mitzvah. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.